Hello, everyone. This is Deborah Shively Welch at Deborah's Round Table. So glad to have you back. Grab a beverage as usual and pull up to the table and let's sit and chat. Got a great show today, an absolutely amazing show. Ellen, how is it down where you are, down south?
Well, I thought I was a little up north now.
No, this is Ellen.
Hey, Ron.
Yeah, Ron's up north.
Yeah. No, but it's been raining. It's been raining here on and off.
It's been raining here too. What about there, Ron? What's it doing there?
Oh, we've had a lot of rain. Today we have some sunshine, but we've had consistent days for about 30 days of rain.
And we have weak sunshine. Well, there are a couple of things I'd like to talk about. First of all, Deborah's Round Table is sponsored by Brian the Hammer and MVPOnDemand.com. If you go to MVPOnDemand.com, you can click on Brian's show and go in and take a listen. It's hilarious. You'll lose weight because you'll laugh your booty off. So if you need to lose weight there, give him a call, not to mention the belly laugh. So that's always good. But there's also the store there, Avenue 4311, where you can shop fabulous. Hey, Ellen, we went out to eat last Wednesday, and Chris was wearing his watch, and excuse me, some people came up to me and said, "Wow, you got the Apple Watch." And he said, so we went into the full sales pitch.
This
is UPRO 6. We got it at Avenue 4311 and MVPOnDemand.com, and it's under $75. And wow, it's really cool, and it worked really great. Like,
wow. Great.
They didn't know they were going to get a commercial.
That's great.
Well, and as I was saying, we have Ron Allen here. He is the author of The Evolution of Bidwist, and in a second we're going to really get into that, but I have a special announcement to make. Ellen knows what it is. No, Ellen doesn't know what it is. Ron knows what it is. Ron knows what it is. Today is a very special day in Hyderabad, India. Murali Chemuturi has his birthday today, and Murali, I hope you get to listen to this, but I hope your special day is filled with sunshine and love. You're a special, special man, and you deserve a special, special day. Some of you may remember that Murali was my very first interview on here, and he wrote Ramayana, translating it from Sanskrit to English, and he also writes a lot of technical support books. Isn't that what they are, Ellen? Because I am brainless on those. Are they tech support?
Yeah, you're talking about with computers and everything. Yeah, it's technical support.
Yeah, he's a brilliant man, and he's got credentials like you would not believe. Just absolutely amazing. But today we have Ron Allen, and I'm Ronald Allen, actually, and I'm very, very excited. He's the author of Evolution of Bidwist, 150 Years in the Growth of an African-American Tradition. And this new book is quickly becoming a definitive benchmark for Bidwist players across the nation. Allen has been researching the origin of the game for several years and was quite amazed to discover an extensive relationship between the game and the African-American community dating back to the 1860s. Now, this is true history, boy. This is going way back. Bidwist, closely related to bridge, evolved from a game played by slaves to a game with an expanded following in many countries, excuse me, thanks to the efforts of African-Americans such as the Pullman Porters, who took the game up north. The nonfiction writing by Allen not only explains the history of the game, but also includes the game's rules, variations, and strategies. It is an amazing book. I've read it twice. It's just amazing. Ronald, I'm so glad to have you here today.
Well, good morning. Thank you. Thank you for that wonderful introduction. I have to get used to your format. See, I see we have an Ellen and we have an Allen, so... Pardon me for jumping in at the wrong time, Ellen, but I was surprised by that.
It's quite all right because we're human, aren't we? And besides, this is the round table. We're at the table. Don't you sometimes accidentally interrupt when you're sitting down and talking?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The only thing missing is the lemon meringue pie, which I'm not happy about.
Well, you know, for me, I don't like lemon meringue. I don't like meringue. So it would
have
to be something
else. Apple pie, or we got peach pie. You're from the South. We got you some pecan pie.
Yeah, or I could have what they call down here Dober's cake.
Oh,
no. Delicious.
We can have the pralines.
Yeah, we can have the pralines. Loretta's authentic pralines and her sweet potato cookies.
Yeah.
Okay, you guys are making
store.
Me. You're making me hungry. We're gonna have to have a commercial where I can go.
Well, you know what? You know what, Ron? You're gonna have to go into the store, Avenue 4311. Loretta's authentic pralines are on sale in the store.
As will Ronald
great
Cook Bakery soon, correct?
Uh-huh.
You're going to be there too soon, isn't it, Ronald?
Yes.
Ron? Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So people are going to be able to get it.
Did you
well,
get
like
that message?
I said, what message? Me or Ron?
No, I was talking to Ron.
Okay, see, I interrupted. I'm just taking another drink of tea, eating another praline.
Oh, you have pralines?
Not yet. I hope they're on the way.
Well, you know what? Wait. You know what? All I have to do is go down the street or call my husband. We need some pralines.
Okay, make everybody jealous. Here, go ahead. Check that.
Yeah, because
I guess
Robert
you're eating a Benoit right now.
A Benoit? A beignet? I'm
That's
not eating a beignet.
That's my friend's son's name. His name is Benoit, and I got mixed up. Anyway.
You guys
saying.
Are having a great morning, and all I have is this homemade coffee, and I'm feeling badly.
Well, no, that's all I'm drinking, too, is coffee.
Me, too.
I'm not eating any beignets, any pralines, no anything.
This is called make pretend. But, you know, I want to get to this book is just, this is amazing. And I think you put a quote in there that I think kind of explains the whole book in a nutshell. And it was made by Winston Churchill when he stated, "The farther backward you can look, the farther forward you are likely to see." And by digging into this game and finding its origins and explaining it, people, when they sit down for an extremely enjoyable game, a stimulating game, full of everything from strategy to trash talk to all kinds of fun things, they're also celebrating history and making history.
Absolutely.
So I love this idea. And you kind of set the book up on the cycle of a new idea, which I guess they use in colleges, of origins /seed, startup /fertilization, growth, established, expansion, maturity, exit. And I like the way you set it up that way, because when you first start, you explain the seed. So let's get into that, the seed of the game.
Okay. In doing the research, which goes over many years, I was somewhat disorganized because I had gathered all of this information. And I was doing this not to write a book, but just for personal information, for my own personal satisfaction. So I had taken a lot of the documentation and information that I had researched and put it in a desk drawer, and it sort of sat there. So when I got out and took it out and finally got to the point where I wanted to publish this, now I had to reorganize it. So I said, well, how do I do this? And I had to come up with a format. So one of my friends who has a master's of business administration, he suggested that I use the format that they used in his college. And that was one of the life cycle of anything. And in the business world, they use the cycle of a startup business, but it could be used for just about anything. And that began with the origin or the seed. And from there, you went into the fertilization process. And then you went into the maturing of the item, and then into expansion. So I began to use that, and as I used those four cycles, and I began to drop all of my documents and data into four stacks. And from there, I went on to organize and produce the book. So that's how that cycle part came about. As you said, it's something that's accepted in most business colleges to give people a strategy as they begin to come up with a new project and how do they go forward with it. And that's what I used to format my book.
That's, you know, the one of the bases of a good book, and this book is excellently written, excellently organized, is just that, organization, from the very beginning. Because your stacks became your outline.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I took that book, and I tried to go back, and my question was this. I had been playing Bidwist at the time I started, about 45 years or something like that, and I realized I knew the game, but I didn't really know the history, how it started, why it started. In my later years, I began to hear some of the newer players express ideas or comments on the game that were not quite similar to what I remembered learning as a young person. So I went back and I said, well, okay, first of all, I hear a lot of things saying that this is coming from our slave ancestors. Is this true? And anything that I put in the book, I wanted to find, was it true? I look for items, and then I look for corroborative information. And if I couldn't get at least two corroborating items, then I would either not put it in the book, or I would point out that here's the information I have, but I really can't document this, and let the reader make a decision. So I went back to the original study, and most people say that the game came from, way back in the 1500s. I traced the game through just before whist, through a game called Rough and Honors, which was over in England, and a game of Triumph. And I brought that forward, and I showed how it evolved into whist. And then once I got into whist, then I started finding out the relationship between whist and bridge and mid-whist. So as I progressed further, I began to make comparative information. I put a chart in my book how I compared the games and showed the similarity. So I just moved forward from there, and that was the seed. Many people say that the game of Bidwist came from whist. As I looked in my comparison chart, I found more similarities to the game of bridge, which came out about 25 or 30 years before Bidwist. And in my book, I give a good documentation of why the game should actually be said to have been fathered by bridge rather than whist, because of the information and the comparison. There are more similarities to bridge than there is to the game of whist. So that was how I formulated, and I started with the seed. And from there, when I had adequately documented the origin of the game, then I went to take the progress of the growth forward.
And why did you feel that it was important to write? Because there are other books out on Bidwist. Why did you feel that we needed another one?
Well, and that's a good question, and I appreciate you asking that. And the other books that are out there on Bidwist, I really enjoyed them. They give a lot of information. The authors did a great job. But, again, I believe that there was some historical information that was not shared in there. And as I mentioned before, I think that everyone that has ever played the game enjoys it immensely and has a lot of fun. But I thought that there were just some things out there that needed to be explained. And in playing the game, I felt that each player should have the opportunity to at least know the history. And as I did my research and as I learned the history, now when I sit and I play the game, I have a greater appreciation of the game because I know the great connection between that and my cultural history. So that was the one thing that I found lacking in all the books that have came before, and that there was no connection between the history and the game. And that's what I wanted to accomplish here.
And it, like you said, it's just so full of information that it reads like a history book, but it also reads like a playing guide. You know, you get into all this beautiful history and you round that all out, and then you explain the game, which just enriches both parts of the book. And I love this book. I recommend anybody read it, and it will be in the store, Avenue 4311, pretty soon. So, okay, now we've got, I know there are some diary references, like from a Horace C. Lee, a freed black man, talks about playing Bidwist. And then you said that sometime after 1862, was became the addition of the two jokers. And I love the way you set that up, because you talked about freed people and freed blacks and black slaves wasted nothing, and that their garbage bins had nothing left to use.
Right.
And so you talk about waste not, want not, and oh my gosh, there's two jokers in this deck. We got to use them.
You know, that's another great point. And again, as I begin capturing the information, almost every day a smile came to my face or a tear came to my face as I began to relive and imagine, you know, the lives of my slave ancestors. And I want people to understand that at this time, when you try to envelop yourself in thinking like this and making a visual image of those days and times, we have to remember that the slave ancestors had very, very little except the one shirt or one pair of pants or one pair of shoes, and a lot of them actually did not have shoes. So as we go into this and we look, and you think back, our whole African-American culture is based on this survival stance that the black people had to take. They had to exist on whatever. Even when we go into the food that the slaves had to eat, if people will remember, we talk about soul food cooking. All of that came forward and progressed with our slave ancestors, because they didn't have steak and potatoes. Mm-hmm. They had to eat the scraps that came off the slave owner's table. So that's where we have chicken feet and fish head and chitlins. And
collard,
see, there
greens.
You go, all the hog maws, all those things. See, all those things came out of this survival mode that our ancestors were in. So I took that back, and they played cards, because it was one of the few things that was acceptable under their life existence in their servitude that they were in. Playing cards was accepted by slave owners because it enabled the slaves to build upon the ability to count.
Yeah.
But see, it was inexpensive because all they needed was a deck, and when a deck was thrown out, in the trash. Maybe there was a torn card or whatever. The slave said, okay, I can use this, because they were using everything that came out that had any value whatsoever. So, and then when they got the cards, this new deck that came out after, as you said, the jokers were introduced into the card-playing deck in 1862. So when they found this new deck with these two jokers, they had to, we got two jokers. Well, we're not going to throw it back. What do we do with it? Well, we'll adapt our game. So we'll modify the rules so that we can incorporate the two jokers into the game. And that became the start of Bid Whist.
That is just so fascinating. So now we've got the emergence or the startup. So the growth. And what I find fascinating about this is, a good part of this, excuse me, was caused by one of the most, I think, unrecognized persons in history that were really integral in the advancement of our culture in many, many ways, and that's George, the Pullman car, the what was it, attendant or whatever. You call him
the Pullman,
ambassador.
The Pullman porter.
That's the word I was looking for, is porter. The ambassador of Bid Whist. So let's talk about George. And for the listeners, George was a name given to all of the porters. They wouldn't even let them use their own names. And they were called George because the founder and owner of the railroads were George Pullman, was George Pullman. So they were all called George. I would love to know how many people were actually polite enough to say, well, George, that's all well and good, but what's really your name? You know, I'd like to think somebody did that now and then. But anyway, he advances the game through. He takes it from the South and brings it up north.
That's a wonderful story, and I commend you. You have went out and you've done your research. You got a lot of information there, Mr. George, just George. As you said, there were approximately about 10,000 to 12,000 Pullman porters, and all of them were called George, no matter what car you were in or what train line you were in, whether you were headed north, south, east, or west. If you needed some service or help while you were aboard the train, you would just holler, George, George, and it's sort of like hollering taxi in New York or Chicago. So that was the name given to all of them. There's a book out called 10,000 Men Called George, a very interesting
mm-hmm.
story. But the Pullman
there
porters...
There are also a couple of documentaries.
I've
known about George
mm-hmm.
for years.
Okay.
God love him. I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
No, in 1967, George Pullman began this railroad production of the sleeping cars for the trains, and he went to the states of starting with Georgia and North Carolina. I don't know why he specifically chose those two states, but our book showed that those are the states that he did his original recruiting in. And he picked up these former slaves, now freed men, and he gave them this job of working on the trains as Pullman porters, and they was, each would service a car. Usually it would be 1 to 4 porters on each car, but most of the time it was 2 or 1. Now, these young men were very educated, and that's the part that became surprising to me, but a lot of them had college degrees. They had tremendous intelligence, but because of the state of the nation at that time, there was very little work for them. So even though they had a college education, many of them had difficulty with finding employment. So the Pullman porters became a source of them to have steady work and be able to support their families. So they went on the cars, and the cars gave them mobility to different parts of the country because now they could travel free of charge from Georgia to New York or Texas or California or wherever the train would go, and they could go free. So they began to travel on their off days across the country, and during their job, if they were going across the country, sometimes they would have a layover, and they would stop at different cities and stay for 1 or 2 days until the next train ride back home or to wherever. But this put them in contact with other black people across the country. And in making that contact, of course, there was dialogue and conversation, and they began to share with them some of the things that were going on in the South, some of their customs. They brought them north. One of them was Bidwest, and they also brought some of the customs north and information from the north back to the south. So there was an inter-exchange between the north and the south because of the relationship of the Pullman porters. And this is why we call them the ambassadors of Bidwest, because they were responsible for sharing the game with many, many blacks up north that had not heard of the game and not had an opportunity to play it. And there are many, many books where they talk about the Pullman porters being up north, and you have pictures and documents of them being out at restaurants or nightclubs or in boarding houses and sharing the game. So this is the reason we call them the ambassadors, and this is why the game began to spread from the South to the North, because it had been played for many years in the South, but it was an unknown commodity in other parts of the country. The people that lived in the South, and I refer to the whites that lived in the South, they played bridge. And when they heard about the game of Bidwest, they ridiculed it, and, you know, they laughed, and, oh, they got a game, and they called it Black Bridge.
Yeah, Black
Bridge.
They thought
it was funny that the former slaves had, imitated them on a game, and they never really played it, and they didn't really learn the strategy or the warmness of the fun of the game. Unfortunately, they didn't for a number of years. But going back to your point, the Pullman porters, as we said, we consider to be the ambassadors of Black Bidwest. And share with your your audience another point I think should be made around the Pullman Porters. We give them credit for establishing Bid West, but one of the great things that they also did is that they began the rise of the black newspapers. At the time, there were two black newspapers that were starting up. One was the Chicago Defender. The other was the Pittsburgh Courier. Though these were fledgling startup businesses, but they grew to be major factors within the black community, major entities that shared information because of the Pullman Porters. Because as the Pullman Porters went south from these cities, they would take a big stack of newspapers. And when they got to other cities, and especially in the South, people were excited to receive these newspapers, especially the blacks in the South. They wanted to know what was going on up north. What's the news? Tell me what's going on. So they were excited when the train would pull in. They were waiting there to get their copy of the newspapers. So because the Pullman Porters were disseminating this information across the country, these two newspapers, the Chicago Defender became the first, and Pittsburgh Courier second, but the Chicago Defender became the first African-American newspaper to have a distribution of 100,000. And that was a great thing for the country and for our community. So I just wanted to share that with your audience.
Well, they were ambassadors in another way, too. I have had the great honor of knowing two women who were over 100 years old when I was talking to them, and this was when I was in my early 20s. And they would talk to me about riding on the Pullman cars and George. That's how I said I've known about George for a long time. And both of them said, I had never really met a person of color before, but I came to love George. We always had the same George. Somehow my daddy always got the same George. And I loved him very much. And one of those Georges met my grandmother, and when she was four, made her a handmade set of a little tea set out of, it's handmade, you can tell, because it's not quite perfect. I have it. I mean, they were sweet and kind and good and intelligent men. So they were ambassadors in that area, too.
You know, that's great, and I wish I had been able to speak with you before I got my book out. I would love to place that in the book because these were great
next
men.
Next book.
And, you know, okay.
Yeah, I have that T-shirt. It's obviously handmade.
That's
but it's
amazing.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, there was
next
one story. There was one story about the Pullman Porters, about a George on the train. He gave such great service to one of our celebrities, Jackie Gleason, that Jackie Gleason, when he got off the train, he tipped him with a $100 bill. And
that sounds like Jackie Gleason.
But these guys were only making like $8-$10 a month. So just $100. So no, great stories. There are so many involved in that era and with these great men who not only the Pullman Porters also were the start of the black middle class. I don't think a lot of people are aware of that, but the black middle class actually started with the Pullman Porters because at the time, right after slavery, in our community, we only had two levels. You were at the very poor, at the poverty level, if you were a slave or ex-slave. Well, we say ex-slaves because slavery is over. Or if you were one that had been a free slave for some time or had developed your own business, then you became in the upper class. But we basically didn't have a middle class. We either had a rich or a poor. But with the Pullman Porters coming in, and they made most of their money on tips. No one imagined that they would have so much money on tips. And the relationship, as you said, that they built with the customers that were on the train, they built this wonderful and warm relationship, and people really appreciate it. And when they left, they would always give them a very decent or very high tip. So they ended up making more money than their salary. So your story is a great example of why that strong relationship was built.
They spread goodwill, too, yeah. Well, first I want to remind everyone that Ron's book is going to be in the Avenue 4311 store, so you need to go to mvponddemand.com. go in there. It's not quite in there yet. It'll be in there very, very soon. But while you're in there, register, because then you'll get notices of all the great deals, and you're not going to get very many notices. They don't inundate you like all these other places do. I don't even get one a day. It's just not a lot at all. But you need to go in and check anyway, because the deal's in there, and there's Maybelline is in there now, ladies, and it's hard to find that. So get in there and look. Also, if someone wants to call and talk to Ron, give us a call at 661-449-9947. And if you're on a landline and have call waiting, make sure you dial *70. If the message says you cannot that your call cannot be completed as dialed, then try £70. And if that doesn't work, $11.70. And what this does is, if you've got call waiting, you don't get bounced out if someone calls you, or you don't get this echo effect that usually happens if you're on the phone and someone tries to call in. But now, since we've been talking about celebrities, how about talking about some of the very famous people that play Bid West?
Oh,
that even I've heard of, because they're in sports, and even I've heard of some people I don't watch.
You know what? We don't have enough time. We don't have enough time. Surprised. You would be surprised at how many people of great renown that play the game of Bid West. And we can start with you and I, and go all the way up to the president of the United States and his family.
Exactly,
Michelle Obama, for your listening audience, she actually has a relationship with Bid West and the Pullman Porters, because her grandfather was a Pullman Porter. So you see the relationship and connection there. So that's why it's incorporated into her family. And I read one article. I understand that as they travel and go on their vacations to Hawaii, there's a favorite hotel that they visit there that they would love to stay at. And one of the things that the manager knows is, when they come in, he always has to make a Bid West table and find a place for the family and their friends to enjoy a game of Bid West. And goes down, and my favorite two people are my favorite basketball stars, Wilt Chamberlain and Michael Jordan. These guys,
yes,
love
Bid
West. They love Bid West in there. And one of the things people should know, and many of them do, in the U.S. Congress, they have the Congressional Black Caucus. Each year, they, for many, many years, have had an annual Bid West contest. And that has continued throughout the House of Representatives for many, many years. Hasn't been involved in the Senate that much until a few years ago. In the state of Illinois, the first African female to be elected to the U.S. Senate was a lady by the name of, is a lady because she's still alive, Carol Moseley Braun. And she was the U.S. Senator, mm-hmm. Junior Senator from the state of Illinois. And she's a great Bid West player, and she loves the game. So she took it to the U.S. Senate and tried to introduce it there, and was successful with a few of the members. So now everywhere except, in the Supreme Court, if you're talking about in the U.S. government structure, from the judicial and to the White House, and we have people playing Bid West, so that's great. And a lot of your musicians, one person that I'm very partial to from the Chicago area is a musician by the name of Buddy Guy. And Buddy Guy here in Chicago, who's known around the world, and he's a great Bid West player. So I could really go on and on and on. I remember former mm-hmm. U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder, loved to play Bid West from his law school days, and he would also always get together and have a card game with his former students in law school. So there are just so many. I would do a disservice if I couldn't mention everyone's names, but there's just a couple.
There's Gordon Parks, award-winning photojournalist and director of the Shaft and Learning Tree movies. I mean, it's just
right.
All kinds of people from all walks of life. Many non-celebrities that play it. You know, the many, many people out there that are just doing their thing, living their life, and playing Bid West.
You know, and thank you for mentioning Mr. Parks. And I think that now he came from, he was actually worked on the Pullman Porters as a Pullman Porter. But one person I would want your audience to always also be aware of, there was a Dr. Benjamin Mays, M-A-Y-S.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Mays was a Pullman Porter. And remember going back, remember I told you that these gentlemen, these George, were people of intelligence, and some of them have
yeah.
college degrees, but this was just a temporary status for them working on the train. Well, Benjamin Mays was a Pullman Porter. He went on to become the president of Morehouse College
mm-hmm.
in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Atlanta, Morehouse, great historical black college that has put out many, 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 many strong black leaders. But Dr. Mays going over to Morehouse was one of the people that was instrumental in the formative years of Dr. Martin Luther King. Martin Luther King went to Morehouse while Dr. Mays was there, and they had many wonderful conversations and shared information. So when we look back, we know that Dr. Mays had a great influence on Martin Luther King. There, again, another strong connection between
mm-hmm.
the world, the black community, and Bidwist.
Well, I think everyone listening should look into the Pullman Porters for one. Look into Bidwist, of course. I plan to learn it. I was supposed to go Friday and learn, but once again got strep throat. It must be in my DNA. But anyway, the Pullman Porters did so much for us that we're not even aware of because black history has been so smothered for so many years. And I would encourage anyone to go in and study them. If you're an historian like I am and you love to read, there are so many stories and so many accomplishments out of this group of men that it's just astounding. It boggles the mind. It really does. It absolutely boggles the mind. Well, we can't talk about Bidwist without talking about trash talk. We like it on TV. We like Cutthroat Kitchen. We like to listen to trash talk. But there's a reason for trash talk in Bidwist. So educate us. Let us know what that is.
Well, thank you. And again, see, there are so many connectional things between everything that happens today in America and black and white lives that we don't see the connection from the past. Going back to your statement from Winston Churchill that I put in my book in the early part of the book, as we begin to search through Bidwist and learn about its origins, now we begin to understand some of the things that happen today. So back when they were playing Bidwist, began to play Bidwist. Remember, this was a time when the slaves had any opportunity for relaxation while they were enslaved, and they would engage in the game of Bidwist. After the Emancipation Proclamation, now they had more time to play the game. But Bidwist had always been a opportunity to relieve stress. During the daytime and you're doing whatever work is required of you, there's not much opportunity to relieve stress. And it wasn't like today when if I'm mad, if I'm having a bad moment, I can at least say a cuss word or beat my fist on the desk or something, you know, to show my frustration. But that was not a wise thing to do during the days of slavery. So a slave or a person working in an occupation of a servitude position, then they had to be very even keel, and they couldn't show any emotions. But at the end of the day, they could come and they could play Bidwist, and they could curse, they could be very animated, and they had fun about it. And there were many times when they would sit and they were playing, and okay, we'll talk about Deborah, let me tell you what happened to me today. And this situation happened, and I was so mad. And I was so mad that I almost, you know, and the guy said, oh, man, you wasn't going to do anything. You stop telling that lie. And this, they would laugh about it. And this laughter and expression and going back and talking about the situation, it gave them a chance to relax, relieve the stress, and feel better for the next day. So then we went into trash talking and lingo, and the lingo came from, started in 1867 when they began to work for the trains. And when they worked for the trains, they gained a whole new terminology and wording that they had never incorporated before. And they had the train lingo because there were different things that happened. Take example of a police work. If you're a policeman and something happens, you got a code word for it, and it's a 411 or it's an AO6 or, you know, whatever. This is the same way on the train. So in BidWest, a lot of the terminology that they had been using changed because one of the most popular ones is the word Boston. Now, for any of you out there that have played bridge, in bridge, when you gain all of the books, you call it, what is it, a Grand Slam, Deborah?
I've never played bridge.
Okay. I believe the terminology is a Grand Slam. You can't capture all the books. Okay. In BidWest, the term Grand Slam translated and changed to Boston. And so now in BidWest, if you capture all the books, you have a Boston. But the term Boston was a train language, because Boston was the end of the line for the trains. Back in the 1860s, 70s and all, Boston was the major hub in the United States because it was a seaport and it was the end of the line for all of the trains. So Boston was going all the way. You're getting on, you got an express car, you're going all the way, you're going to Boston. So that was one of the terminologies that came out of the train lingo. There's a term in BidWest for special, meaning that you're going to bid with trucks downtown. Special was another language from the railroads because it was like the express car. Now that we're on that point and I mentioned that, I'll give you another connectional thing that a lot of people can relate to when we talk about specials. How many of you remember the song Midnight Special? I remember they sung it on the TV, Let the Midnight Special. So, see, there's your railroad terminology that has transferred over into BidWest. And those are the things that I got excited about because I've been seeing and using these terms all these years, and now I understand, oh, that's where that came from. That's why they say that. And that's why I began to get excited in my research.
Yeah, and you mentioned in your book, too, that in trash talk, they would say things to each other that they couldn't say to their owners, but make it funny,
which is incredible. Absolutely.
I mean, what an advancement in psychology. Well, I think it's built in us. I think this is why God, Creator, whatever name you give to the Supreme Being, gave us humor, because he knew we'd needed to get through this life. So, but you have a pretty good example of trash talk that you used on Brian's show. Do you remember what that was? You were playing with a white man.
Okay. Yeah, you
it
know
was
what, there
funny.
Are two, there are two stories and whatnot. And thank you for taking me there, because I want to share with all of your listeners. I don't know about the demographics of your audience, but I share this story with many cultures and many ethnicities, because today with the online web playing of BidWest, we have many people across the world that are playing BidWest. But here in the United States, a lot of people are surprised when they find that there are many white people now that are playing BidWest. So I had the opportunity one time in a small tournament to play against another African American who had a BidWest party, BidWest partner, that was a white guy. And I think I sort of took him for granted. But anyway, we went through the game, and they whooped our butts. They tore us up, and they ended up winning the game in fantastic fashion. And in BidWest, when you do something good, you know, you're high-fiving and you're jumping up and you're talking trash. And I'm used to that, and I can take that. But this was one of my most embarrassing moments, because when this guy whooped me for the final time to win the match, he carried with him a CD player. And when you saw him off to the side, he had a little earplug in his ear. But now that he had won the game, he took the CD player and turned it on the amplifier, and the music came out, and he began to dance. But the embarrassing thing was the record that he was playing, the song that he was playing, was play that funky music, white boy.
Oh, for God's
sake. And he's changed the words, you know, play that big whisk music, white boy. And he's jumping and he's dancing. And everyone's around is just laughing. And I, you know, see, when you're trash talking, the only thing that you can do is grin and bear it. And, I was so embarrassed. So that's one of the stories. But the other one I share with you is one of my friends that was playing a big whisk tournament up in Wisconsin. And it was supposed to be over on Friday evening, and they had a appointment. He and his wife were there. They had an appointment to get back to Chicago early on Saturday morning. So the Midwest tournament took a little longer than what was expected, and they had to postpone the final match until the next day. And his wife was telling him, hey, we got to be out of there quick, otherwise we're going to be late. And he said, baby, we're going to do the best we can. Let's go down here, and we'll see if we can rush it along. And they go down, and they begin the first table, and he gets the first hand, and he looks at the hand, and this hand is so great that in the terms of trash talking, he turned to his wife, and he says, baby, start the car. Start the car. He's got this great hand, and it won't be long. We're gone, you know. So these are the things that we do, and people laugh at, and it's very spontaneous. You know, it's not scripted. It changes with each hand and with each partner, and this is a way that the Pullman porters and the slaves displayed their wit and their yeah. quick humor. I had a comedian one time who said that he believed that Bid West was really the start of stand-up comedy. And that was very interesting when you think about
it. Yeah, I remember that in the book.
Yeah, this was the start of improv because you were saying things off the cuff. As situations come, you would see how you could adapt that and make it into a funny or humorous story. So thank you for the opportunity to share that.
Yeah, well, not only that, I think it's important for people to know that there's trash talk and there's trash talk. This trash talk is built on humor, as we've been discussing. It's not built on insulting someone and making them feel bad. It's built on making them laugh and making yourself laugh.
And making it
like,
laugh.
Like baby start the car. And even the play that little bit with white boy was maybe a little over the top, but it sounds like
it was
funny.
Over the top, but it was so, you know what, it was so funny that there was no offense taken, because it, you know, it was in line with what we were doing, and it was a flip on everything, and it was very witty, and we could not help but laugh. So I think your audience should probably talk, when we say trash talking, let's think about back in the 80s and 90s when they used to have the TV shows where they would say a roast, where they would take a celebrity and they bring him up. So this is trash talking and roast is the same thing. So we're roasting, trash talking, we're roasting a particular individual in a humorous and funny way and not meant to be, what's the word I'm looking for? We're not trying
offensive.
To be offensive.
Put down people.
Thank you
be
very much.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think the basis of it today is the same as our ancestors. If I may call the black slaves my ancestors as well, they're the ancestors of my culture, you know, the way I live today, because the influence is so amazing from what those, so
can I share one thing?
What they have, yes.
Let me share something with you, and on that point that you just gave, and on the book, and I put down African-American, and I didn't hyphenate it, because the key word here is un-American. And what I want both blacks and whites to understand is the relationship here and the development of the game is really, really very impactful for both the white and the black culture. And to your listeners that are out there that are from the white culture, I will share with you that Bidwist developed many of our black leaders and our black professional people, and it impacted you in a way that has changed your life. And that's what we should all think about. If we start basically from the beginning of the day when we turn on the light bulb, and we know that Edison invented the light bulb, but a lot of us did not know that it was only done because of Mr. Louis Latimer, who was instrumental in sharing with Mr. Edison the idea for the filament of the bulb, because Edison could not get the filament to work. So
yep.
We go past that and we look at all the wonderful things. Daniel Drew, those men that have been in service, and those who've had loved ones that have been in the service have been wounded. Daniel Drew invented a new process for blood plasma, where he could separate the blood and be able to save it and transport it. And in World War II, this saved so many, I don't know how many thousands of lives, and he became the head of the Red Cross. There's a young black lady, Dr. Hill, that invented the laser surgery for cataracts. So everyone out there that, you know, that has cataract surgery, your life has been impacted because of that. The pacemaker. There's a black person that didn't invent the pacemaker, but they invented something to help the pacemaker. It improved the regulation of how this instrument worked. So those are the things that I share with people as I make presentations, and there are many more. But I share with people that your life has been changed very positively because
I love your analogy of the light bulb because these people who suffered so profoundly shed a light on the world that we're finally able to see because of Black History Month, because of our opening up our minds and beginning to cherish all of our people and what they contributed. And there's also one person you didn't think of because you're going down the line of inventions, and that's Harriet Tubman, who taught women that they could make a difference, that they could control their destiny, that they could do it. I have studied Harriet Tubman since I was 16 years old, and she was an incredible woman,
woman. Great story.
Yeah, you know, bald until age four, you know, poor baby, but also abused by her owner, and I hate to use the word owner, but that's what he was at the time. An incredible woman. I encourage people to study her, especially women. You want to learn how you can control your life? Read about Harriet.
In your reading about Harriet, did you see the contribution of quilt making to her rescues?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's a great story also.
But there's also a lot of great information in your book. And we're running out of time because I know you have to go. And when you do have to go, I will try to continue giving more information for you after you have had to hang up to get to your other meeting. But
you are so kind.
I love this book, and I like you very, very much, and I'm so glad we've met. I feel like we've become friends. But let's do talk about what are the significant discoveries learned from your research. I know that one of them is that people were trying to attribute the creation of the game to a Northern European or Europe. Yeah, and it's proved.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, and that was the thing. I tried to, you know, I looked at everything, and I tried to look at it objectively. I didn't try to accept everything that I came across as truth. I looked at something that would corroborate it. And I put a little insert in my book, and there's a funny commercial on TV about the girl that meets a guy from France. And when he comes up, you know, I think the only thing he can say is bonsoir. And they walk off. I forget the commercial, but it's a very funny commercial, and I just put in my book, do not believe everything that you read on the Internet. All those facts out there have not been documented. Some of them have just been thrown out there for self-interest. So I tried to go back, and I tried to look at everything and say, hey, can I substantiate this? Can I prove it? Does it make sense? If I can't substantiate it by documentation, do I have a preponderance of the evidence that would lead me to make sure it's true? But one of the things that I ran across in my research was on a website by a playing card manufacturer, and I won't mention their name at this time because we have corrected this. But when I went into their website, they had a section that said the game of bid-whist was invented by Dr. Hubert Phillips, who was an Englishman. And I looked at it, and I started going back and going through my documents, and I said, no, this is not true. I looked at my information, and I researched Dr. Phillips, and I found that he was a very good card player that played bridge. And he wrote 70 books or more on the game of bridge. But then the key thing was is that I looked, and he was born in 1891. And I said, my goodness, he's born in 1891. And I went and I checked some things. I said, we know that the person that invented the game of bidwist would have had to been born at least about 1850. So I went down a chart, and I don't have it in front of me, but I said, first of all, I submitted this to the card company. These are my facts that I have. I would like for you to review them to see if you might agree with them, and I would like for you to share your information with me so that I can do further research. And I pointed out to them that Dr. Phillips was born in 1891, and we can document that the game was played before 1891. He was an Englishman who never came to the United States. He's also an author that wrote 70 books on bridge, which he didn't invent, and we know, but he didn't even write one book on bidwist, which you claim that he was the creator of. And I gave them a couple of other things, and they looked at it, and they felt that this was overwhelming evidence, and they agreed to take that off their site.
Well, good for them.
That's why I don't mention their name, because they were willing to listen. They did review my information and found that it had credibility to what I was sharing with them, and they agreed to not perpetuate that false image anymore. And see, the only thing is that, okay, bad information gets out there, but this was so important to me and my culture that I wanted to make sure that the information that was shared was accurate. And I didn't put all of the dots together, and that's going to be for someone younger and the next person coming along. Maybe I'll have time to get some more dots. And I ask your audience to, if you have information in your diaries and your papers laying around home, then share them with me, because if I can get additional information and documentation that I can share with the general public, then that's going to be good for everybody. And it's capturing the history. This year, 2015, was the 150th anniversary of the Juneteenth celebration, which is a very important part of Black history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this is also in bidwist. It's been there through all those years, from horse and buggy to cars to trains. So.
Yep. Quickly explain Juneteenth, please.
Juneteenth is, and everybody should be aware of this. We talk about the Emancipation Proclamation, and that was issued and was supposed to be effective in January 1st of 1963, and all the slaves were to be free. However, that did not happen, and there were many states and plantation owners that still held slaves in bondage. So it was not until after the Civil War ended in 1865 that the U.S. government sent federal troops to all the states where slaves had not been freed, and the last one happening down in Texas around June 19th, and they said, hey, you're free. They made sure that every slave in the United States was out and on their own and emancipated. So that was June 19th, but everyone should remember, we're talking about over 2 years that a person supposed to have been emancipated remained in bondage and servitude. That is the importance of June. That is the, we call it in the Black community, the second Independence Day, because that was the day mm-hmm. when slaves were actually freed from servitude.
And it's Juneteenth because, am I remembering correctly, because they got
they
to different
from,
places.
Different places and whatnot. They started in 13, went all the way to the 19th, so we take the 19th as the last day. So June 19th is considered to be Juneteenth in the United States.
Something we should all remember. And if nothing else, meditate. during that time because it was a great day for everyone. You know, when you enslave someone else, you enslave yourself, and you open the door up to your being enslaved. So, because, you know, where does it stop then? So it was a great day when that happened. Unfortunately, not everyone got through it very well, but at least they were freed, right?
They were freed, at least that happened. You know what? And see, this is a conversation that we need to have. And I'm not here to rub old wounds. It happened. We should all realize that it happened. And the reason why we need to be clear on the fact that it happened is that so that we don't recreate the problem.
Mm-hmm.
We know that we've been in this bad place before. We're not going back there. But there are many. See, if you avoid the realization of this history, then you're subject to recreate.
Repeat it.
So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need to educate our children. I know my son is very educated on what happened and abhors it. He can't believe my husband too, but my son has a very gentle soul. And, I mean, wild swans have fed out of his hands. They just seem to intuit with their baby there, by the way. And if anybody knows swans, that's amazing. But we need to educate our children, as I have and as many of us have, a lot of us have, how wrong this was and that it happened, not just to the blacks, but also to the Jews, to other peoples. I'm Irish. My people were enslaved for a long time. It's just wrong. And slavery encompasses all kinds of different areas. But this is a different conversation. Maybe you can come back and we can talk about that. But before you go, because I know you have to go, why don't you give us your contact information, email it to me, and I'll put it on your page so that people coming to listen will have it, and then give me, you know, the final thing that you would like to say before the interview's over.
Well, for my contact information, those of you who would like to reach me can go to my webpage, which is www.ronaldlallen.com. And that will allow you to search my website, get information about the book, and you can even purchase it there. If you cannot see it right now on Avenue 4311, my phone number where I can be reached is, I'll give you my cell number, 773-213-0010. So I would love to talk to you. I would love if you'd reach out to me and share any information you have on the Game of Bidwist. Because as Deborah said, I'd like to look at book two, and I would like to have the input of all of you. So I thank you very much. And for the last thing is, Deborah, thank you so much for the opportunity to share with your audience. I enjoy speaking about Bidwist. It's a growing game now. As I said, it's played in about 8 countries within the world. So thank you for the opportunity of this pleasant conversation. I've enjoyed it. I hope that your audience has enjoyed it also. And I would be very happy and very grateful if I'd have the opportunity to come back and speak with all of you again sometime.
I was hoping you would say that because we didn't get to cover everything. But so everyone out there listening, if we want to get into this second part of his book about playing Bidwist and you're interested in it, don't call Ronald and pile up his phone, but you can write me at Deborah, D-E-B-R-A, S as in Sam, Welch, W-E-L-C-H, like the grape jelly, I wish, at live.com. Or, Ron, why don't you give your email address, and we'll put this all on the page.
Okay. You can reach me at BidwistPros, B-I-D-W-H-I-S-T, pros, @gmail.com.
Yes. I mean, I would love to have you come back to talk about the game. I was going to ask you that privately because I didn't want to put you on the spot, so you did
it for me. Well, I will be on the spot.
Thank you.
And I will come back if your listeners will share specific questions and comments that they have when we come back, we'll be able to delve down into those particular areas that they would like to hear about.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Ron, so much. I've enjoyed this. I knew I was going to enjoy this. It's even exceeded my expectations. This has been wonderful.
Thank you, Deborah, and Ellen.
Time.
It's been a pleasure to be here with you and to your audience. God bless you. Love you all, and may everyone have a very blessed and safe 4th of July.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ron.
Goodbye.
All right.
Bye.
Goodbye. All right, everyone. There were questions we did not have time to get to, but I do want to say one thing about what he's talking about is, personally, I'm a euchre player. I adore euchre, and there's bridge, there's spade player, pinochle, bridge. If you have a working knowledge of these games, you can learn bid whist. And just find your local bid whist group and talk to them. Talk to them and see if you can sit in. I know we have one here in Columbus, the Columbus, Ohio Bid Whist Society at www.columbuswhist.com. And they're having a pinochle tournament in July. Get a hold of them. Go in there and look at it. And they're also having a statewide whist tournament weekend. So you need to get a hold of them. And if you're in the greater Columbus area, and see if you can get in there. Or they were willing to teach me how to play. They were going to take me in there and teach me how to play bid whist, but I developed strep throat again. And couldn't go because I thought passing cards was not a good thing when you have strep. Cough on the cards, pass them on. Let's see who will resist it and who will succumb. Thankfully, I got on antibiotics right away, so I'm feeling pretty good. I'm still a bit hoarse. But they're because I always ask my guests to send me questions that they absolutely want me to ask. And we didn't have time because Ron and I talked before the interview and decided that we were going to really delve into the history rather than how to play the game. But one of his questions that I find to be extremely interesting is talk, if you will, about how the game of bid whist can provide opportunities for young people to engage in activities that provide alternatives to drugs and violence. And I think that's extremely important because I think one of the reasons why my son avoided that, and he was, trust me, being in high school, was offered drugs many times, sometimes for free just to try them out so they could get him hooked. We know how this works. But he was into guitar. And he was so into guitar that was his focus. That was his drug. Mm-hmm. And we all have drugs, don't we, Ellen? Some of them are... pralines.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Some of them are the Euro Pro 6 watch. For me, it's writing. That's my drug. I have to write. I write, therefore I am. My son, it's his guitar.
That's mine too. Yeah. With my daughter.
And photography.
You know,
my son, photography. Yeah.
Hers is her acting and her singing, and so.
Well, I think if we give our children alternative interests, we greatly lower. It doesn't mean we're going to get rid of the possibility, but I think we greatly lower the chances of their getting into drugs, because at that age, it's very easy to become obsessed. I know I'm still that way. If I'm learning a new thing, I become completely obsessed with it. I have no room for anything else. That's all there is in the world. I'm talking about free time, of course. But so if you get your kid into something they're really into, that's all there is. And so some kid tries to give them drugs, and it's like, no, don't bother me. I'm thinking about this right now. Just leave me alone.
Yeah.
So it has proven to be a deterrent to, going down that road.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I loved Ron's interview. I love the way he wrote the book. And for anybody who enjoys history books, this may not be something you would pick up thinking, oh, this is a great history book, but it is. It's well-researched. I hate it when I pick up a history book, say, on Henry VIII, and I start reading, and then I'll go, there's this where it's wrong. It's just wrong. Mm-hmm. And then you just want to close the book, and you say, I'm sorry I bought it. Because now you can't trust any of the rest of the book. His mm-hmm. you can trust. It is so researched and so well thought out. So this was, I thought this was a really great interview, and I enjoyed it extremely. What did you think of it?
You know, I liked it. You know, I liked talking with Ron the very first time when he was on Brian's show, and, you know,
mm-hmm.
I like talking with him again. He's a very interesting person, and, you know, the game sounds really interesting.
Yeah, it does. I wish to heck I could have gone down there and learned it. And these people were so nice. They'd set up a table for me with three players that otherwise would have been in there just having fun to teach me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had
mm-hmm.
to let them down. And I feel horrible about it. But I intend to go there and learn it. I want to learn this game. I really want to learn this game. Sounds fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think this pretty much ends our show today, doesn't it? I mean, we've had a great time.
Yep.
And I want to remind everyone once again that you have to go. You should go to MVP on demand. Notice I didn't say command. MVP on demand. It's at .com. Makes me say command. MVP on demand.com. And click on the Brian the Hammer Show and laugh your booty off and get some belly fat gone from belly laughs. If you think I'm exaggerating, go into the show. I am not exaggerating. Ain't no way.
No.
I laugh so hard
actually,
that my ribs ache for hours.
And if you want to listen to it live, it'll be on in like 17 minutes.
Exactly, which means I've got to let you go. This is Ellen, my executive producer, Ellen Johnson, love her to death. And she's going to be interviewed soon because she's also an author.
Oh,
but go to
you.
MVPOnDemand.com and click on Brian the Hammer Show today. Do it today. And Avenue 4311, I swear, guys, there's Maybelline products you can't find anyplace else.
Oh, yeah.
Just,
I mean, there's new stuff coming into the store every day. Every day.
And that UPro 6 watch, people think it's the Apple, and we paid, like, what, a third of the cost?
Well, yeah.
If that.
Yeah. It's more than a third. I mean, you saved more without getting that watch. You know, the Apple Watch, they want, like, $600, $700, depending on how many gigabytes you get.
And the knockdown is $200. This
mm-hmm.
one's, what, 65 with shipping, 67
mm-hmm.
with shipping, something like that?
Yep.
Please, give me a break.
It works. It works even better than the Apple.
It does. It works. People are complaining about the Apple Watch. But when you go into the store, register so that you get all of the updates. And again, not going to fill your inbox. They don't overdo it. They're very, very, very... considerate as to how much they put out.
Mm-hmm.
So with that said, we're going to end this show with another happy birthday to Murali Chemuturi in Hyderabad, India. Sweet friend, have a good day. Well, your day is almost over. You're 12 hours ahead of me, but I hope it was filled with love and sunshine. You deserve it. And with that, I'd like to say to everyone, have a good day, good life, and bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.